This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Over the river and through the stock market.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Looks like investors have one thing to do before heading to Grandma's house for pumpkin pie. They want to sell some stock. You've got worries about the credit market and subprime still. Plus, oil is just pennies from $100 a barrel. Already in the first 20 minutes, the Dow is down 109 points to 12,900. The NASDAQ has dropped 28. The S&P 500 is down 14. In Japan today, the Nikkei fell 2.5% to its lowest close in 16 months. European shares are down 1.5%. There was one piece of good news out this morning. The Labor Department said fewer people applied for unemployment insurance this week. But even that might not say much. Marketplace's Janet Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
Standard & Poor's economist David Weiss says today's labor numbers may be suspect.
The timing of Thanksgiving can toss the numbers all over the place because of all the seasonal hiring that's done by retailers.
The report is in line with economists' forecasts. But Weiss is still fearful that the global housing bubble and subprime meltdown could cause a recession.
We've raised our probability. We think it's going to be about a 40% chance. Not so much because of the housing problem, because that we've been adding our forecast for the last year or so, but because on top of that, we've got $100 oil to deal with.
Still, Weiss says the nation survived $300 billion in losses after the savings and loan crisis of the early 90s, so we should be able to weather the current subprime storm. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Well, right now, Congress is working on ways to clean up the subprime mess and make sure it doesn't happen again. But commentator Robert Reich says the federal government already has the tools to tackle the problem. It just isn't using them.
As someone who is in charge of one of the biggest regulatory agencies in the federal government, I can tell you regulations themselves don't do squat. They have to be vigorously enforced. And that means setting clear rules, having enough inspectors, and knowing when vigilance is required. So how to prevent another banking crisis that causes millions of families to lose their homes and investors to lose their shirts? The Federal Reserve already has all the authority it needs to do this. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913, as amended, and the Bank Holding Company Act of 1956 gave it power to monitor and regulate the entire banking system. The problem here was it failed to use this authority. It wasn't even paying attention. A few years back, when the Fed lowered short-term interest rates to 1%, money became so cheap, the Fed should have known lenders would hand it out to almost any borrower who could stand up straight. Especially when lenders could immediately fob off the loans to middlemen who bundled them and sold them off again. Big banks, hedge fund managers, everyone looked the other way because the party was too much fun. And then when the Fed started raising rates, it should have known the party would be over and there'd be a mess to clean up. But the Fed didn't, and still doesn't, pay enough attention to the effects of its rate settings on the practices of lenders and borrowers. It still doesn't have enough bank examiners who know what to look for, still doesn't know how to oversee giant financial conglomerates whose deals are so complex even their own top executives don't understand them, is even now disregarding the next banking crisis, which will be a wave of credit card defaults. Instead of pumping out new regulations, Congress should give the Fed the resources it needs to use the authority it already has, confirm new Fed governors who will be vigilant in overseeing the banking system, and hold all Fed appointees accountable for doing the job they're supposed to do.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. His new book is called Super Capitalism. You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, November 21st on Marketplace.org. The European Union is facing a year-end deadline on some key trade deals. These are agreements with about 80 former colonies. The EU seems to be playing these poor countries off one another. From the Americas desk at WLRN, Dan Gretsch reports.
The European Union charges a duty of $257 for a ton of bananas from Latin America. Meanwhile, bananas from 76 former colonies in Africa, the Caribbean, and the Pacific can enter the EU duty-free. But those preferential trade rules expire December 31st. And the EU is insisting its former colonies sign new, less favorable agreements before that deadline, or face sharply higher duties. Stephanie Burgos is with Oxfam America.
The take it or leave it line is quite the familiar refrain, I think, in trade negotiations with poor countries.
Latin America's big banana producers are eager for a level playing field in Europe, and the EU is using that threat to pressure its former colonies into signing a new agreement.
This is pitting one poor country against another, which we think is entirely unfair.
Burgos says the former European colonies need more time for negotiations. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Thanksgiving is a big moneymaker for New York City. You've got the Macy's Parade, all that shopping, and it's a big time of year for Broadway. Except this year, the stagehands are on strike, and local businesses are really struggling because of it. Stacey Vanek Smith has more.
The lights are off on Broadway, and that's costing about $17 million every day, according to the League of American Theaters and Producers.
The entire neighborhood is in really rough shape, and not just the Broadway shows and everybody who's out of work, but restaurants, hotels, cabs, everybody, because the theater is such an important part of New York City.
That's Tom Viola, executive director of Broadway Cares, a charitable organization that raises money for AIDS patients. Broadway Cares collects donations from theatergoers and counts on the holiday rush of tourists.
Last year, the appeals raised about $3 million in the fall. What we're losing here on Broadway is about $350,000 a week.
Viola says that loss will hit especially hard this year, with federal and foundation dollars on the decline. To try and make up the difference, Broadway Cares has launched a webpage where the public can give. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
The skies will be full of airplanes today, full of passengers who paid a lot of money to fly this holiday. The airline industry is obviously doing better. It's even hiring pilots. Thousands of them were laid off after 9/11. But now it seems the major carriers can't find enough pilots. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
The big airlines are snapping up pilots who've been working for the regionals during the last few years, and that's put the regionals in a bind. Many have had to lower their minimum qualifications. Some are paying bonuses for the first time. David Powell is a former United Airlines pilot and interim dean of Western Michigan University's College of Aviation. He says smaller airlines are finding they have to hire pilots right out of schools like his. They're even poaching his flight instructors.
They're actually concerned about taking all of our flight instructors because they know that is their primary pipeline. If they cripple that, then I can't produce enough pilots for them for the long term.
He says the public is firmly hooked on the convenience of air travel, something that seemed exotic a few decades ago.
Welcome to the world of Transworld Airlines.
Captain Paul Rice is with the Airline Pilots Association International. He says when jet travel took off in the 1960s, there was a mad scramble for pilots. The same thing is happening today as air travel expands around the world. He says the major carriers are running out of pilots. The military is providing far fewer than it did even 20 years ago. Many pilots have quit the industry in recent years, and fewer staff hold a captain's license today than in 2001.
The level of individuals that held that license prior to 9/11, we probably won't see that for another 10 to 12 years. That's a dramatic drop.
Contract negotiations are coming up at several of the big airlines. David Field of Airline Business Magazine says pilots have given up a chunk of pay and benefits over the last few years.
That dynamic, combined with the factor that the carriers are going to have to be hiring more people, is going to have an implication for airline economics. And it does filter down eventually to what we pay.
But Captain Paul Rice says even if negotiations go well, pilots can't count on a return to the jet set days of the 60s.
If jet fuel stays right around $100 a barrel and the U.S. economy slows or the world economy slows, we'll be talking in 6 months about the pilot surplus.
In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Here's something you might think about before you sit down for Thanksgiving dinner. Where did the food come from? Today, the food we eat is transported from all corners of the world. In a new book, author Sarah Murray takes a look at our movable feasts. Sarah, how is food transportation affecting the global economy?
It's having a huge impact. We're really sourcing food from everywhere you can think of. It's changing economies both here and overseas. If we can now get products from places like Africa, that has made a huge impact to countries like that. At the same time, of course, there are the worries that we've had recently from China and other places with the contamination of food. So we have to think much more carefully about safety regulations and protecting our food supply.
Yeah, obviously that's got to be one of the chief concerns right now. Are we going to reverse course here and start trying to produce more food ourselves so we don't have to worry about this?
Well, that's what a lot of people might say. But on the other hand, if you look at some of the food scares, a lot of them have actually, they're not as well publicized, but a lot of them come from local producers that are producing in the U.S. So transportation per se is not the problem here. It's actually, regulating the producers of our food.
One of the big issues right now is sustainability, the carbon footprint, and everybody's pointing to transportation as one of the main culprits. What did you find when you went around the world in terms of where the environmental impact is coming from with food?
When you start to look at agriculture, you find that the emissions from that industry are vast, whether it's feedstocks for cattle or farm machinery. All sorts of energy is used in processing food. Once you start to look at that, you realize that actually the transportation is a relatively small part of that. And in fact, what one should be really looking at, if we're talking about trying to lower the carbon emissions of our food supply, is looking far more broadly at the sustainability of food production as a whole. That might mean that some food could be produced locally and it would be more sustainable, but it might also mean that sourcing food from somewhere where farming practices are more sustainable could be a better option.
Sarah Murray. Her book is called Movable Feasts. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. It was great talking to you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and happy Thanksgiving.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.